Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us, those of you who are in the hall here, those of you online. We also have, since Thursday night, an online retreat. Many members are attending with Brian, the title being something to do with relating to thoughts or relating to our mind in a better way. Anybody remember the exact title? Anyhow, it seemed very beneficial. How to relate in a more wholesome way with our own mind. So I want to talk to you a little bit about life today. During the week, I do a lot of interviews and I'm in groups with members. So I hear different things. Last couple of weeks, of course, this just mirrors our society. Kind of the internal suffering of people seems to be exacerbated once again. People are have family members who are dying from COVID. People are knowing people who are getting sick, being hospitalized. People are have mixed feelings. People who are vaccinated have mixed feelings about people who are unvaccinated and exposing themselves and their families, especially when they do get sick, as is happening, or even dying for no reason. I've talked to hospital workers, medical people, who are also say there's a lot of anger among medical people, because once again, the systems are so stressed, and so they have a lot of anger because the majority of these people are unvaccinated. So a lot of anger and judgment. And again, that just mirrors society. Talk to parents, their children are going back to school. Again, there's an unknowable, right, in terms of how this is going to play out among children, especially among the unvaccinated children over these coming weeks, especially in Florida with the controversy around masks, which isn't happening in other parts of the country. So that's just one, as well as I think many people are kind of getting weary as we sort of go back down, back into kind of wearing masks and having to think about our social interactions. There was a devastating report that came out of a major international organization that sort of collates all the data, scientific data on climate change. That came out, I believe, early this week. And basically, as all of us know, the news was not good. I mean, if I can paraphrase it, it seemed to say that we have really passed a tipping point in terms of what, and that what we're seeing now, with the changes in the weather and the heat and the fires and the sea rises and, that this is, that we passed the tipping point, that now it's just a matter of, whether we can slow it to a certain degree. Of course, major social dislocations. Talking to a friend in Oregon, they're having, he was always saying, so happy to live in Oregon, Florida with all its heat. And when we talked, it was 90 degrees in Florida and it was 100 degrees in Portland. So, and this is, you know all this, but again, this is the world as well as societally, families, are very much divided politically. the gap between different political views, social views, is just becoming more divisive, less tolerance, more anger. Do you want me to go on? I can read the social inequalities. So here we are, right? And yet each of us, as individuals, each of us as families, and each of us as a spiritual community, we want our practice, right, to give us the tools to navigate, a world that is changing rapidly. The changes are very quick, happening very fast. And I didn't even talk about social media. Don't get me going on that one. But just, more and more people not living in reality, consensual reality, common reality that we all share. So many people just living in virtual realities. Very easy to be manipulated. People having their social relationships, their connections virtually, creating virtual personas that they then, manipulate to get likes and dislikes. So I'm actually not a negative person, actually. But I think I want my optimism to be grounded in reality, not in some false Pollyannish view of what's going on. I think the great gift of Buddhism, the great gift going back to the Buddha, is he just looked at life as it is. And from life as it is, by looking deeply into it, he understood it deeply. But most importantly, he understood how even in the midst of it, one can still become a full human being. Realize all the full positive, wholesome potential of the human mind and heart. And that we do not have to be the slaves of our environment. We can find freedom, always. It's always available to us. So what I wanted to share with you this morning and then open it up for discussion is something I have shared before at moments like this. Tsongpa Gyalrae's Three Fierce Mantras. Some of you will be familiar with it. I've pulled them out of the I pulled them out of the Dharma hat bag, Dharma hat, over the years. Once gave a retreat on them, and probably I would imagine a year or two ago when this whole COVID thing started, probably talked about them. Some of you, it could be new. So we say in our tradition, hear the teaching. So first we hear the teaching. So for some of you, maybe the first time you're hearing them, other people have heard them before. Second is reflect deeply on the meaning, on the the application, the import of the teachings, which again, some of you who may have heard it have not really reflected deeply on them, and some of you may have. And of course, the third thing is practice. If we say, oh yeah, or maybe some people are going, oh no, he's not going to talk about the Three Fierce Mantras again, Yeah, we have to keep talking about the Three Fierce Mantras until we get it. Dharma is about realization. And realization means we understand it deeply and we live it. It's no longer separate from it. And if we live the Three Fierce Mantras, I assure you, you would have the capacity of living wisely, intelligently, and compassionate in the midst of all kinds of difficulty and challenges, Our minds would not have anxiety or fear. Our minds would not have sadness, despair. Our minds would not have anger, resentment. So if in the face of the instability of our times, we still feel these emotions, then please listen deeply to these three fierce mantras, and most importantly, take them into your hearts, to your life, and practice it. So these are mantras. Mantras are, for those of you background, mantras are, in the Hindu tradition, words of power, right? And there are positive mantras, and there are negative mantras. I mean, in other words, there are mantras that create all kinds of good mind states, but then there are also mantras that are kind of powerful. They can destroy. These are the fierce ones. They can destroy obstacles. They can blow things up. They can get them out of the way. They're very powerful words, mantras, especially these fierce mantras. So these are called fierce mantras. So you know they have a purpose. Their purpose is to destroy something. These are words of power, right? So usually, Sampagiri called them three fierce mantras tells you he was telling us them because they have the power to destroy obstacles, to destroy afflictions, to destroy all the things that are disturbing us, right? So wrathful, fierce mantras are to get rid of all the things that are agitating us, okay? Very directly, powerful, thunderbolts. Okay? The first one, whatever has to happen, let it happen. This is so difficult for us. This is so much against the grain, right, of our culture, right? Because we are raised to what? If we don't want it to happen, do everything you can to prevent it from happening, right? We are masters of an unwillingness to accept reality and to accept that our ability to affect reality may be very limited, if possible at all. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. So this is a mantra, this is about really our movement into the future, right? The world of where we have lots of expectations of how we want life to be, how we want people to be, how we want situations to be, how we want the world to be, right? How we want things to turn out, right? We have all kinds of expectations about that, don't we? And around that are those two paradoxes of Buddhism, which is so much a source of suffering, is hope and fear. We hope that things will turn out, will happen the way we want, but we're deadly afraid that it won't. So we're always going back and forth between those two polarities. We're caught. Emotionally, we're caught. Right? And this can be, I mean, this can be big, like the world, the planet, human relations, how people treat each other, and it can also just be the day, how our day goes, how things unfold in our day, how things unfold with our children, how things unfold in many, we have all kinds of expectations of how we want it to be, how we expect it to be. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Now, well, let's just stop. It's just, can we do that? It's going to happen. So this is an assessment. We assess. Something is happening. It's happening right now. It's happening with this person. It's happening in this relationship. It's unfolding right now before me, right? Can I not resist? Anger is resistance. Fear is resistance. Sadness, despair is resistance. I'm resisting it. Even though it's happening. Even though it's unfolding, right? I resist. I don't want it. And not only does that mindset create all these create a lot of negative emotionality, and a lot of a lot of energy is put into that resistance, that holding back from life. But what's really essential is it prevents us from dealing wisely and intelligently and compassionately with it, right? You know, it's happening. It's unfolding. That's the truth. Can I just totally be in harmony with that unfolding? And yet, act in a way that, you know, moves with the circumstances, but perhaps, can moderate things or modulate things or change things. It's not passive. It's not like, oh, whatever will be, will be. Okay. It's not that. It's much deeper than that. I mean, whatever will be is the extreme of stop it. I don't want it. You know, those are the two extremes. One is, you know, we're endlessly in life to control and manipulate. And the other one, we're just very passive, you know, whatever will be, can, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right? This is not that at all. This is a view of things that's highly intelligent and wise, and allows one to free all one's energies. As Shanti Davis says, if there's something to be done, do it. If there's nothing to be done, accept it. So simple. Because it's happening. And our intelligence, the aspects of our mind that is able to understand the unfolding of cause, it's really about cause and effect. We understand cause and effect. Maybe that's another way to understand it. We understand that things are unfolding, this is causing that. Or there are many variables that are causing this. And it's all in play. The world is endlessly in play. Life is endlessly in play. Endless variables. Within in our own body, variables are at play, right? Can we control it all? Can we stop ourselves from aging? It's going to happen. Can we stop ourselves from getting sick at some point? Getting a disease? We can certainly take preventive measures, but it still may happen, right? Right? You know, can we protect our children from the world? Can we, you know, all the things we want to do? Can I make things be the way I want? But if one understands karma, one understands causes and conditions and understands that's what all that's going on. Why do we have the world we have today? Because of causes and conditions. It's not because the gods are playing with us. It's not, you know, they're just causes and conditions. Why the world is the way it is, people are the way they are, society is the way it is, people relate to each other the way they do. Causes and conditions. Causes and conditions are reality. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. In other words, totally accept the unfolding of your life. Don't be separate from it. Don't be outside it, which is where many of us live. We are like outsiders to our own life. We're like observers to our own life. Right? We're not in our life. We're not part of the process of life. It's happening. The sky is falling, right? What? It's happening. But yet, we can pick up the microphone when it drops. It's happening. Many things are just happening. Let it happen. That's a mindset, you see. It's a mindset that does it, that's not afraid. It's a mindset that's not in despair. It's a mindset that goes, it shouldn't be this way, when it obviously is that way. Can you see? It's this very clear, open, accepting, intelligent way of living life. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. And then we'll talk a little bit more about what are the tools we need to be able to do that. Second one, whatever the situation, now we're in the present, right? The first one is about the unfolding as things move to, you know, whatever's happening, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. It's like Tsongkhapa Gyara, he's kind of like whacking us one side and then we kind of recover and then he whacks us the other way. Whatever the situation is fine. How many of us live that way? The fine, it's fine, is not like, it's a fineness that's beyond fine and not fine. It's a situation that says it's fine simply because it is what it is. It just is what it is. In that sense, it's fine. It's not fine from any moral sense or ethical sense. Or, do you see what I'm saying? It's not about that. It's very direct and deliberate and saying, yeah, whatever the situation is in life or anybody's life, it's fine because it is the way it is. Is that not true? Is there any situation that you can think of in life that is not just the way it is? I mean, everyone's saying what I'm saying. It is the way it is. People are the way they are. The world is perfectly fine. The climate is unfolding perfectly according to causes and conditions that are affecting it, right? It's having a perfect response, right? To all the things that are going on, all the variables, the human variables, geological, it's, you know, the climate is just fine with it all. It just what? It just responds. We may not be fine with it, but the climate is fine with it. It's fine. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. In life, usually we say what? Good situations, bad situations. Right? Isn't this the way we do it? This should be, this shouldn't be. But this is transcending all that and says, that's just the human being judging, evaluating a situation as it is and saying, that's good, that's bad. That's wanted, that's unwanted. That should be, that shouldn't be. My life should be like this. My life should not be like that. Their life should be like this. Their life should not be like that. Well, I mean, from a personal point of view, yeah, that could be, you could have all any view you want. But the truth is, whatever the situation is, it is the situation. And so when we, I mean, the, when they're saying fine, it's not like that, oh, that's good, you know, because there's lots of suffering. There's lots of difficulty. There's lots of pain in life, right? So it's not saying, oh, that's fine. You know, it's again, it's not that. It's saying it's fine because that's the way it is. And we have to stop resisting our life. Many of us resist our life because we think the way our life is not fine. I should not be living the life I'm living. Right? The things that are happening to me shouldn't be happening. The things that are happening to others shouldn't be happening. Right? I mean, you know, we live on Nebraska Avenue, you know. All day long, suffering people. Living, dying, interacting on the street. To say it's fine is not like, oh, that's good. No, it's not. Personally, it's not good for them that human beings have to live this way, or their life has brought them to such degradation, right? No. But from the point of view of the person, to say that the situation I'm in is fine means I understand the causes and conditions that have brought me to this moment. And I do not reject, I do not resist, I do not judge. I totally stand here in my life, fully responsible and present to the situation. Right? And the only challenge before me is what? What do I do now? Right? How do I work with it? Again, this is not passive. It's not saying, oh, okay, this is where I am. This is what's going on. Okay. No, it's saying, but it's not all that, again, that anger and that judgment and that guilt and that shame and that blame and all these mind states that we create. Because we just will not accept the reality that, yeah, that everything that has happened to me has happened. And this is where I am today. Everything that has happened to others has happened because of causes and conditions. And this is where we are today. And it's that sense, it's fine, you see. It's very important that we understand it, that it's not a moral judgment. It's not a, this is good, this is fine, like, that's the way I want it. No, it's not that at all. But we have to understand, to say something's not fine is a judgment that we're imposing on a situation that is just what it is. And why is it the way it is? Because of causes and conditions. And not just the cause of conditions of the individual, the cause of conditions of society. I mean, there's so many variables, right? So many variables, but they all manifest in each of us in our life. And the third one is really, I mean, they're all so un-American, you know what I mean? Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. And the third, I really don't need anything to be happy. Before I say anything, please close your eyes a moment and ask yourself, is that the way I live my life? Do I really believe that I don't need anything to be happy? I really don't need anything to be happy. And the emphasis here is on things. Can I say that about myself? That I know that inside? That if all the things of my life, and not just the physical things, you know, relationships, you know, all the things of our life, can I ever sit here and say, yeah, if I didn't have any of them, I still could be happy. So we have to remember these, the developer of these three fierce mantras who taught them, Tsangpa Gyalre, implied in this third one was the phrase, but the Dharma. I really don't need anything to be happy, but the Dharma. So that's understood. Okay, meaning there is something that we need, but it's not a thing to be happy. There's a great freedom in that, isn't there? To know that I don't need anything to be happy. Because in the world of things, physical things, jobs, relationships, right? There is impermanence, right? There's coming and going, there's gain and loss. There's instability, there's all kinds of things. In the world of things, people's homes get burnt up, social dislocation, wars, violence, famine. I mean, people, right? They lose all their things. They have to leave, their things behind, don't they? Many different situations in the world. If it happened to me, could I know that the essential thing cannot be taken from me? I carry that because I carry that within. So, I mean, I certainly, if in what is going on in the world does fill us with any kind of emotional affliction, disturbs the ease of the mind, I certainly would recommend to people that they reflect deeply on these three mantras, three fierce mantras, and that they use them. You know, we use them, we say them every day in our meditation, and like words of power, like mantras, right? When in our daily life we feel, you know, all that energy, of resistance to life, resistance to the way things are unfolding, but not wanting it. And when we feel that is agitating us, then we bring out the mantra, right? Fierce mantra. Thunderbolt, so it can destroy it. Now let me just, before I open this up, meditation. Which we begin with every time, and which is kind of a, even though these kinds of mantras and ideas and views are very important for us because we don't spend our life in meditation. To me, the most direct way we can learn this is on the cushion. Because you might find that when you sit down to meditate, no matter how you expected it to be, how you expected it to go, right? Did you ever find out that it happens in its own way? And that one of the big things we learn on the cushion is that I can let things happen. I can let thoughts arise, feelings arise, bodily sensations arise, and I don't have to repress them. I don't have to control them, manipulate them. I can learn to let them be, to see them clearly for what they are, and I cannot grasp at them or avert them. On the cushion, we may be feeling, we may get in touch with feelings, mind states, physical states that we might not consider fine, which means I don't want to be feeling this. I don't want to be thinking about this. I don't want to be touching this emotion. I don't want to be having this memory, right? But we're on the cushion. It's clear that all this is going on in our mind, and we have a tremendous capacity inwardly to learn the second one. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. It's workable. Even I get thrown into prison and I'm put in solitary confinement, can anybody say, that's fine? Yeah, I'll deal with it. If my child gets thrown in prison, I'm taking, you know, strong examples. Can we say, yeah, I'll deal with it? But where do we learn this strength? See, this is like a strength of mind, you see. And it becomes more than conceptual, more than intellectual, when we are practicing this way in meditation. You know, to me, that's the place to really learn it. Because you realize it's all the resistance. And all the resistance to the feelings are all going on in my mind. Even though I may be thinking it's about the outer world, it's actually a process that's going on in my mind. And if I can learn in the meditative practice, see, the wonderful thing about meditation is, if you do it right, is you take a posture and you don't move, right? Now at home, maybe we can move, but like we can't move. Which means what? We have to deal with things that we don't usually deal with. We have to deal with, I'm uncomfortable. I'm physically uncomfortable. I'm emotionally uncomfortable. I keep having this reoccurring memory come in my head, or this drama come in, you know. I'm uncomfortable. But we learn not to move. That's our usual go-to. I'll just, you know, change the channel. I'll just go somewhere else. I'll just get up and do something. But no, if we sit and we sit with it. And we learn by holding it in mindfulness and awareness that we can hold it. We can see what it is. And we can experience that which we're calling uncomfortable, or that which we're calling any of the afflictive emotions, and realize they don't kill you. Shanti Deva said, they don't have knives. They don't have swords. They can't hurt me, right? Physical things can hurt me, but emotional things don't have the power to hurt me unless I turn them into weapons. But they're just feeling states. They're just thoughts. They're just memories. They're just mind stuff. And if we can see clearly that that's what's going on, and learn how to be present to them and look into them deeply and understand their nature, one does not have to be disturbed by them, because they're all arising where? In our minds. They're not arising anywhere else. And so through the meditative practice, the ever-deepening meditative practice, one develops this capacity where it really counts, which is within my own mind, because it is my mind through which I'm dealing with life. I mean, this, you know, it's not my elbow that's dealing with life. It's not my nose that's dealing with life. It's my mind that's dealing with life. It's projecting about life, that's interpreting life, that's, right? So it is in meditation that one develops the inner ability to have that kind of clarity and strength, right? That when one is out there in life and situations are constantly unfolding, you know, this way and that way, we have the inner strength and the inner certainty. We have the Dharma, right, to guide us and support us. It's a great strength. And, you know, and certainly what we were talking about earlier in terms of the instability, the changeability of what's going on societally and it's affecting us personally. We need that. It's essential. Because if we don't have it, what's going to happen? We're just going to be swept away by emotionality. And when we're swept away by emotionality, not only do we enter a realm of suffering, but our capacity to really be there in a good way to help people, in a supportive way, in a kind way, in an intelligent way, in a strong way, you know, will not be. So to me, as I look at the world and the unfolding world, as I listen to the members talk about, you know, what's going on in their lives, yeah, at a deep level, we need this Dharma deeply inside ourselves. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. I really don't need anything but the Dharma to be happy. Are we going to be here overnight? I'm just hearing this talk today. No, we need to practice. We need to reflect. We need to practice. And we need to take these fierce mantras and the view that's behind them into our life and practice with them. I mean, actually, the obvious thing is the practice is let go. Let go of our resistance. Let go of our expectations. Let go of hope and fear. You know, enter the world. You know, our practice is to enter the world openly, accepting everything as it is. And just working with it. Freely working with it. Whatever it is, whatever comes our way, we just work with it. It's like playing, you know, what do you call it? Competitive sport, right? You know, in other words, where it's not just you. You know, there's another person you're playing against or another team. Can you control it? Can you control what they do? No. Right? If you're up at bat, can you control the pitch? No. If you're playing tennis, can you control the way the person's going to hit it? No. Right? You can't control anything. But all you can do is what? Respond. Respond to what? Respond to what's happening. Not what I think is happening, or not what I think should be happening or shouldn't be happening. Because why? It's happening. So we're, you know, so we know when we play those kinds of games, we have to be in reality. So in the game of life, which is a, you know, a different kind of game, has its own rules, we have to have this ability to respond intelligently, skillfully to whatever's coming our way, both as an individual, family member, you know, society. So let me stop now. I'm interested in your questions. And, you know, again, these are fierce mantras. It's strong medicine, right? There's nothing sugar-coated here, is it? These are fierce mantras. There are many beautiful mantras in Buddhism. Love and compassion, right? Kindness, I mean, those are called peaceful mantras. But these are wrathful mantras, and wrathful mantras are used in difficult times. So that's why we want to have these wrathful mantras in our minds. So good, let me stop here. Anybody in the hall and at home, Ray Lin's on, please. Questions, challenges, trying to get some clarity about what's being shared today, but you know, real situations. I mean, this has got to be practical. So can anybody in the hall or anybody at home just ask a question?
I'd like to know who came up with these mantras.
Tsangpa Gyalre. So I can't remember what century. I mean, it's not recent. So these are very much part of the, I mean, if I said 14th century, I'm making that up. But I mean, it's not like 19th century. So these are, right. So these are in the Tibetan canon, so to speak. People refer to them.
So it's been around for years.
Yeah, centuries. Yeah, within the Tibetan tradition, right.
Okay, when I reflect on those mantras, mm-hmm. and then I hear some of the explanation or commentaries that you had provided, I think I can live with them. I think, being a person of technical background, it's very hard for me to...
Taking a what, I'm sorry?
I'm an engineer.
Right.
So it's very hard for me to accept, you know, whatever is happening without some resistance or response. So now you mentioned that you can have response.
Yes, yes.
And so that's a good explanation or clarifications, I would say. And then on your last mantra...
Well, let me just say, because obviously as an engineer, if somebody presented a problem to you and you said, well, just, you know...
Yeah, like
bridges stay up and bridges fall, right? I mean, you know,
right.
Right, you wouldn't last too long.
Right.
Yeah.
Like when I'm hearing this pandemic going around.
Yes.
The scientific community has a duty, I think, to come up with the vaccination as soon as possible and to resist this pandemic, which they did, obviously, but still it's not helping everybody.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I think we have to accept that as a reality, what's happening. And if we resist, then we get into conflict and worries and.
Yeah.
Am I reading it right?
No, you are, but again, you know, but part of it is also you accepting that there's a significant amount of people who don't accept science. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Seems to me.
Well, that's a yes or no question, Gautam. Is that true? You understand. It appears to me that there's a significant amount of people who don't accept science, who don't accept the words of authorities. Is that not true?
No, that is true.
Yes.
But I don't know whether they accept science or not, but there is some ego involved.
Something.
That they are saying that, no, I don't want to follow these people. I'd rather stay here.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a physician who works in the ER. He says, you know, they have people dying of COVID. And when they tell them you're dying of COVID, they say it's not true. There's no such thing as COVID.
Right.
I mean... The human mind is capable of generating any type of thought and belief. I mean, that's the problem, right? So, but yet this is true. This is what's happening. We can either be aghast, you know, or judgmental, or, you know, we can go through all kinds of things depending on our view. But at the end of the day, this is what's happening. You know, like you said, you know, you could have a problem at work or something, you know, be resistant, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to respond to it. So why go through all the emotional stuff and the resistance and just go right to the response, which again is that, you know, that Shanti Deva, you know, if there's something to be done, do it. If there's really nothing can be done, accept it, because you understand there's nothing can be done. It's not blind acceptance, right? Which is kind of a wisdom thing. Thank you. Other questions? This is, yes, Ray Lynn.
You bring up the idea of happiness. Of happiness.
Uh-huh.
I realize that it's specific people, situations, and things which bring me happiness, but it's not an essential part of my mind, which is what I'd like to cultivate. Mm-hmm. Does that mind state occur naturally if one has calm, equanimity, and acceptance? Is that the source of happiness?
So let's talk about that. So when we talk about happiness, which is what the person's question had, you know, there is a kind of worldly happiness, which I think we all know. We are happy. What? When are we happy? Anybody ever been happy here? You're happy when you get a hug. Because you like hugs. If you didn't like hugs, you wouldn't be happy. I mean, if you think about it, but right. So when you get something that you like, you're happy. Anybody else ever been happy? You're happy
when something good happens to your children.
When something good happens to your children, right? You're happy. When something bad happens to your children, you're not happy. We're happy when we go to the beach and it's a beautiful day. We're unhappy when we go to the beach and there's red tide, right? So, you know, worldly happiness, which is our happiness, you know, it's a human happiness. The problem with it, it's conditional. That's the problem. That the other side of worldly happiness is unhappiness. You can't have it both ways. You can't be happy when your kids, you know, something good happens to them, because you probably will be unhappy when you hear that something bad didn't happen to them, or, you know, right? Tammy will be happy when somebody gives her a hug, but if somebody blows her off and doesn't give her a hug, she will not be happy. So that's the problem with worldly happiness. It's conditional, right? So that's why the idea of I don't need anything to be happy is talking about a happiness that's deeper than the happiness of ordinary people, which is us. But we can find this deeper happiness, which is more about a happiness of ease of mind, contentment of mind, well-being of mind. You know, why do birds sing every day? I mean, it's amazing to me, right? Every morning they're singing. It doesn't matter what, you know, what happened the night before. Every morning they wake up singing. I mean, to me, that is wonderful. And I was out walking early this morning, and this woman and her daughter were walking by, and they had this little dog. They were walking, and the dog, you know, takes a look at me, and all at once, you know, the people say good morning, you know, very nicely, right? You know, like, you know, we're pleasant people when we walk. The little dog is like so happy. Comes over to me, got this big, you know, and just licking and happy, and, you know, like, isn't that interesting? And I actually said to the people, I said, isn't it amazing how quickly they wake up happy? You know, most of us need a cup of coffee or something, you know, like they just come in the world happy. and they're happy to see me. And I'm a complete stranger. Right? I've never laid eyes on that animal again. And yet it's greeting me like it's like been waiting for me for years. How can that be? See, how can you have that kind of happiness that is not calibrated on wanting or needing or, you know? I mean, I just felt that dog was like a highly developed being. It was just so happy, naturally happy. I mean, it was. Yeah, so it's something like that. Just happy to wake up in the morning. Happy to be alive. Happy to be that I have eyes that see and ears that hear and nose that smell. You know what I mean? Just content and happy just to be. Like, if that's our ground, you see, then everything else is good, is extra. But if we don't have that ground, then we're dependent on the hugs, or we're dependent on the good things happening, or we're dependent on things working out our way, or to be happy. You see? If I'm happy because I get the food I want for breakfast, I'm happy. But if I'm happy just because I have food, right? I have food. Isn't that amazing? I'm going to wake up in the morning and there's food, right? I mean, there's, you know, open the fridge, it's like there's food there. I mean, right? Animals don't have that, do they? Except our pets do. But most animals, they get up in the morning and what? They have to go out and hustle every day, right? The world of animals. But we get up and it's like, you know, what's in the fridge? What's in the pantry? If it's not there, you know, we just run down the store. You know, what an existence. That should make us happy. But yet most of us go, we don't even notice that, do we? We don't notice that we're still alive today, right? And the trees, and you know what I mean? The people, it's all that we're here, that we can be here together and we can talk and share. And isn't that enough, you see? It's just worth reflecting on. I don't need anything to be happy. So that's what it means. Again, this is kind of radical stuff. Anybody else? Yes, Ray Lynn.
Can you please say more about how to reflect deeply on these mantras? Having heard them before and recognizing that I haven't practiced them, I think reflecting deeply is a step I've been missing.
Yeah. No, I do have some. I've been carrying this around in my pocket for weeks, so I'm very happy to use it. Yeah, so, you know, this is just this key piece, this reflective piece. So when we hear these teachings, we hear them intellectually, right? We hear them, you know, we hear them with our thoughts, and we, you know, we maybe understand what is being said. But reflection is that process whereby we think about meaning and application. See, I reflect. What does he really mean? But like the way we're talking, like in real life, you see, what does that really mean? What would that look like? And so you reflect the teaching we received into our life. You know, that's what it means. We reflect it into our life so we really see whether it really is true, whether it's applicable, whether it's meaningful, how to apply it, right? And then we practice. But if we don't do this reflection piece, I mean, hopefully, like, I mean, that's what I mean. When I read these, it's like, you know, they're mantras, right? So mantras are what? Mantras are usually in Hinduism, Sanskrit words, right? And many of them have no meaning. You know, they're just sounds, and some of them do have meaning, but they're not intellectual. The words themselves have the power. These words are words of power. They have the power, again, to dispel our illusions about how things should be, and to accept the world as it is. And then we have to ask ourselves, every time you suffer, and when I say suffer, I don't mean, you know, like terrible. I mean, like, we go through little sufferings all day. Little resentments, little angers, little anxieties, little fears, little disappointments, little hurts, little judgment. You know what I mean? We do it all day. You know, we don't just do it only in the big stuff. We do it on the little stuff. And if to reflect means I look at what's going on and I reflect it in terms of these teachings, you know. What am I holding on to? What is it about this situation, this person, that I don't want to accept? What is it about the way this thing's unfolding that I don't want it to unfold this way? You know, so the question always really simply is what am I resisting? To me, resistance is a wonderful word. You know, resistance means if there's resistance, there's friction. If there's friction, there's not ease, there's not flow, right? So, you know, this is simple. Every time there's any kind of friction in my mind, it's because I'm resisting something. I'm holding on to something. I'm not letting go. So, you know, what is it? What am I not letting happen? What do I don't want to happen? Or what is it about the situation that I'm in or other people are in or the world is in that I'm unwilling to accept? And am I really, as I listen to my needy mind, that little needy voice inside me, everybody know that voice inside them? Sometimes it's just a little needy voice and sometimes it's a big needy voice. Everybody know that voice? Yeah. Am I willing to ask myself, do I really need this that much? Right. Is that true? That if I don't get this need met, my life is going to be fundamentally over? I mean, when you say it like that, it sounds bizarre, but if anybody's ever been in a needy mind state, anybody ever been in a needy mind state? It feels like that. Right? I got to get this need met. As if somehow, if I don't get it met, it's like, you know. And yet, if we look back on our life, I mean, we've been having needs since we came out of the womb. Right? I mean, we come out of the womb needy. Don't we? Yeah, so this has got to, yeah, we have to reflect on it both at home, but most importantly, we got to take it with us and reflect the unfolding of our life, the unfolding of our mind in these teachings. So eventually they become part of us. It becomes our view. We don't have to keep using them. Now we have to use them. But over time, they become our view. We understand the world is just the way it is because of causes and conditions. Whatever situation I'm in, bad or good, it's all workable. It's all workable. Right? It's fine. You know, it's a challenge, it's a difficulty. I can grow. And this one about to always remind ourselves when that needy mind comes up. You know, do I really need this? Is this essential? Air is essential. Water is essential. Some fuel for the body is essential. What else is essential? I mean, really essential. Sleep's essential. I mean, there's not a lot, is it? And then, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, remember? Yeah, but, you know, part of that is that ability to have that center within yourself and that awareness that, you know, you can be content and present to anything, you know, allows you just to move through life as life changes. Things work, they don't work. They give us hugs, they don't give us hugs. Things work out, things don't work out. Right? Good news this morning, bad news this morning. You know, I'm just like, right? But there's something that's not affected by that. Because one understands that is just the way of the world. The world operates according to cause and effect. That's the law. Everything that happens is happening because of prior causes and effects. No other reason. I think, oh, you know, like what's going on in Afghanistan, right? Like the Taliban is basically taking over in a week or so. We spent $1 trillion in America, you know what I mean? And all this. And people are going, what? They're unbelievable, right? And yet, obviously, the Taliban knew what was going on. I mean, there's a reality of what's going on. This is reality unfolding. But obviously, many people weren't living in reality, were they? I'm just using that example because people are amazed. Amazed at what? At what's happening. Why is it happening? Because of causes and conditions. I'm not an historian. I'm not a sociologist. I'm not a political scientist. But, you know, I know that the reason they're taking over and that the other government is just totally because of causes and conditions. I mean, there's no other reason. But if people don't understand causes and conditions and are willing to look in reality, they'll be amazed. Unbelievable. I just use that as an example because it's like, that's what you hear, right? Among certain sectors. How could this be happening? Well, obviously there's another whole group of people who know exactly why it's been happening. And we're like that. Right? We're like that in our life. How can this be happening? I mean, how many things in our life right now are we not attentive to? Are we not living in reality about? Are we not seeing things as they really are? Because of our beliefs, because of our not wanting things to be like this, wanting things to appear like that, because we're invested and we don't want to admit that it's not working. You see what I'm saying? We what we see played out societally is stuff that just people do in their minds, right? Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it is fine. I really don't need anything to be happy except the Dharma. And when I say except the Dharma, Dharma means that any path you follow that gives you that inwardness, that inner strength and certainty and clarity, that no matter what happens, I'll deal with it. I'll do my best, which is a wonderful thing to know, right? I don't have to be afraid. whatever happens, I'll just do my best to deal with it. And that I have the capacity within me to let go of all the afflictive emotions and all the delusions. And I have the strength and the willingness to live in reality, deal with what needs to be dealt with. And we're fortunate that we have a good community, good Sangha, to support us in that. So thank you, everyone. We'll stop now.